doctor?
That very difficult question again. Who remembers something from yesterday? Who remembers what day it was yesterday? Who remembers what book we were reading from? And who remembers what year it almost isn't anymore? So it's a really confusing one. Who remembers something from yesterday's class? I'll give you a hint. It has something to do with Dhruva Maharaj.
Dhruva got instructions from Narada Muni, and he decided not to follow that. He said that this instruction is for Brahmana. But I'm shut down. I'm in the mode of ignorance.
Please give me something that is suitable for someone in my condition. Your instructions were wonderful for those touched by the mode of passion or touched by the mode of goodness, but I am in ignorance. I am feeling enmity to Saruchi and also to my father, also to Uttama. Anyone remember anything else? Yes.
Krishna and Narada Muni were testing the intensity of his desire.
Yes. Why?
To see if he seriously wanted.
Why? What's the purpose of tests?
One of the points we mentioned yesterday was for the one being tested to see what are the things he has to improve.
Do they teach you that in school? Do they teach you that in school? Do they teach you that in university? That's the purpose of assessment? Tell them that they should. That's one of the purposes. Anything else? Anyone remember anything else? Not just by determination, but determination is required. Yes. And when we say, yes, I want Krishna, I want to serve Krishna, I don't want anything of this world, maybe in his own way, Krishna says, let's see. You only want Krishna? You only want to serve me? Okay, let's find out. Because until our consciousness is focus purely and eagerly on that desire alone, Krishna won't award us with the highest benediction. We won't know what to do with it, practically speaking. It's like giving the keys to a wonderful, wonderful, expensive car or airplane to a 7-year-old child. They'll just get themselves in trouble. Not that one can enter into the kingdom of God, into Goloka Vrindavan, and get oneself in trouble. But really, we can't enter until our heart is pure, because we don't want to be there. Until we are in love with Krishna, we will be out of place in Goloka Vrindavan. Will be out of place in the same way, because our mood will be completely different. It's like if we were in Goloka Vrindavan, and we'll be thinking, why is everyone just trying to serve Krishna? Don't they know I'm here? How about me? So we can't be in Goloka Vrindavan. The qualification is to be in love with Krishna, to acknowledge that it is He who is the center. He is the center of existence here as well. But here, in fact, He's the center of existence, because He's the Param Satyam, the absolute truth. But there, different from the material realm, everyone acknowledges that He's the center, and not something intellectual. They love Him. They are filled with prema bhakti for Krishna, the Supreme Person, who possesses unlimited, wonderful, lovable qualities. He is the proper object of affection for everyone. How do we know that? Now that's an interesting question. How do we know that Krishna is the proper object of affection for everyone? Someone sighed very deeply in the corner over there. How do we know that Krishna is the actual object of affection? Have you asked that question to yourself? Have you? No one's admitting it. Huh?
We realize by experience.
We realize by experience, yes. Huh? Shastra?
The devotee's teaching.
And devotees, guru.
I think that if we experience a little bit of something that devotee says, maybe the rest is also.
We trust more in that way. Also, when Prabhupada sometimes was asked this question, how do you know, how do you know? Well, sometimes he asked the devotees this question too, how do you know? And I've heard one time he answered, we experience. I see that by worshipping Krishna, how I'm being taken care of. Experience. And Prabhupada was happy with that answer. And if someone says Shastra, yeah, of course that's a proper answer. But then someone opposing will say, well, so many shastras, there's so many people who say their scriptures this and their scriptures that. And sometimes Prabhupada answered that by saying, do you think the great acharyas, like Rupa Goswami, these people are so brilliant, Raghunath Das Goswami, they gave up the positions of practically millionaire sons. Raghunath Das was married to the most beautiful of all young girls. His parents were begging him, take money, take money. And he preferred to live like a beggar. So do you think he wasn't tasting something, something wonderful? Do you think he was just being fooled? You think they're such fools, these most incredible intellectuals who memorized and were experts in all learning. Do you think they're such fools that they're just worshipping something that doesn't exist and they're not experiencing any result, and yet they think they are experiencing, they're so deluded and crazy? And Prabhupada couldn't accept that, and neither can we. These great personalities are so great. Any characteristic of a great person, truly great, these persons have, and yet what are they doing with their lives? They're just giving them to Krishna's holy names and chanting and chanting and chanting and crying sometimes. Raghunath Das Goswami was crying on the banks of Radhakund, oh Krishna, oh Krishna. He hadn't been eating, he was thin. And he was crying and chanting, Krishna, Krishna. And one man who knew that he was from such a wealthy family in Bengal approached him and said, dear Raghunath, you don't have to cry because you're so hungry. Why don't you just go home to your parents? And they'll take care of you, they'll feed you, no need to cry. And he said, perhaps. Why don't you go home to my parents? Some people get their happiness in one way, and other people get their happiness by crying. Go away. So Dhruva Maharaj, we heard in the first class how he was brokenhearted by a material, mundane experience. And that forced great determination to take birth in his already determined heart. A determination for something material. But yet, due to the good instructions of his mother, Suniti, that he took shelter, full shelter, with all that determination.
he took full shelter of the Supreme Lord, or he wanted to. And this young boy was so determined that he went to the forest all alone. Just imagine, with no credit cards, no anything, no material security at all. Of course, when we're young, we do things, and it's all an adventure. But he was so young. He was so young. He was determined, sincerely determined, to find the Supreme Lord. His wanting something material was not a disqualification. Of course, it wasn't the highest level of search, but the fact that his heart was not yet pure was not a disqualification. How encouraging! Because if we had to be pure before we began, no one would even begin. So he was so determined. And he went to the forest, and because of his sincerity, Krishna inspired his great devotee, his own great devotee, Narada Muni, to give assistance and shelter to Dhruva. And rather than just either awarding him with what he wanted, or even giving him the instruction that would allow him to gain what he wanted, first he tested him and told him to go home, you're too young. Because the process that Narada wanted to give Dhruva, which would allow him to see the Lord so quickly, and indeed Dhruva saw him within 6 months, he was going to have to be incredibly determined. Incredibly determined means, regardless of what the material energy accosts you with or throws at you, it doesn't make any difference. You're going to stick to the path that you've been given. This type of determination is actually required in spiritual life. If our consciousness, if we become very determined or simply very sincere, we will cut through all the difficulties, because Krishna consciousness is not dependent on anything in the material world. There is nothing. It is ahaitukiya pratiyata. It is independent of every material circumstance. Jiva Goswami in the Sandarbha shows that even it doesn't depend on what kind of body, it doesn't even depend on having a human body. Gajendra, who was in an elephant's body, was a pure devotee. Or not when he started, maybe he was in distress. But Gajendra was in an elephant's body, he took shelter of the Lord. And Hanuman, a monkey's body. And Vritrasura was in the body of a demon, fighting with the demigods. And he was a great devotee. That means that devotional service is completely independent of externals. It only depends on one thing, and that one thing is bhakti, on having devotion for the Lord, nothing else. So there actually is nothing that can stop the flow of our devotional service if, and of course it's a big if, we are sincere and determined enough. If we're sincere enough, because if we're sincere, fully sincere, naturally we'll be fully determined. So the greatest problem that we face is lack of sincerity. We think that our problems are mostly external, but mostly our greatest problems are internal, that we're not sincere in the sense of we have so many other desires within our consciousness. We have so many other desires. We're not focused on what we really want. We'd like to please Krishna, but conditions apply. Only when this and this and this and this circumstance. But the great devotees, it doesn't make a difference what the circumstances. They just even adverse, difficult circumstances that cause them to fall onto Krishna's lotus feet still more tightly. Just like if there's a rope being lowered down the well and you want to get out of the well, and this is the only way you're going to get out, no matter what's happening, no matter how you feel, whether you're in a good mood or a bad mood, or it doesn't make, nothing makes a difference. You're just going to hold on for all, with every bit of energy you have, because you have no choice. There's that story that Prabhupada even told about Mahatma Gandhi had a fight with his wife. Yes, even Mahatma Gandhi had a fight with his wife. And he got so angry at her. Yes, he even got angry at her. And he threw her out of the house. Go away. Get out of here immediately. The door is open. Go. Yes, he even threw her out of the house and told her, as we would say in New York, get lost. And then after a few minutes, there's a who is it? Opens the door. What are you doing here? I told you to go away. I had nowhere to go. Okay, come in. If we are like that and actually feel how that it's difficult or this or that, but I have nowhere else to go, Krishna will always take us. That simple point is sincerity, understanding that I've committed myself, I've sold myself to Krishna, I'm yours. It may be good, it may be bad, but I have nowhere to go. I may like it, I may not like it, but I have nowhere to go, I'm yours. And Krishna said, okay, come in, let's try again. So Dhruva was so determined, he was so focused. So Narada, after testing Dhruva to see if he was really had the determination to succeed in this difficult path, he began to instruct him. So we're going to read from 39 to which verse? Does anyone know? It's not written there, I think. Yes, to 63. Now, although Narada is going to give Dhruva very, very difficult instructions on the path of bhakti to follow, and when we hear how he followed them, we'll hear how austere and difficult they were. Oh, how strong-minded and focused one has to be. Because as soon as you don't eat for a while, the mind says, I want to eat, and you say, and then you tell your mind, no, you can't right now because of this reason and that, but no, I want to eat, and the mind starts throwing a tantrum like a two-year-old child, no offense to any two-year-old children here. And we give in to it. We give in to the mind like that. So to perform the process that Dhruva actually performed, which was so exceedingly difficult, required full commitment, full determination. But although Dhruva's process is quite different from the one that we follow, in a sense, far more difficult, still, all the essential ingredients are the same as our process, and we'll hear that. So you might want to write down, and every time we come across an essential ingredient that's parallel in our process and Dhruva's, even though Dhruva's, the way Dhruva performs, as we'll hear, if not today, we'll hear it tomorrow. So difficult what he did. But yet the essence of the process of Narada's instruction is the same. So this is text 39. The great sage Maitreya continued. The great personality, Narada Muni, upon hearing the words of Dhruva Maharaj, he became very compassionate towards him. And in order to show him his causeless mercy, he gave him the following expert advice. Now, His mercy was causeless. That means there is nothing that anyone can do that could force him to give his mercy. But yet, Dhruva's method of acting and his sincerity melted his heart, Narada Muni's heart, and it caused compassion to come to his heart, and therefore, even though he didn't have to give his mercy, but Dhruva's very nature evoked his compassion and therefore his mercy. The great sage Narada told Dhruva Maharaj, the instruction, and here is the essence of the process, as we have heard already, the instruction given by your mother Suniti to follow the path of devotional service to the Supreme Personality of Godhead is just suitable for you. Become devoted to the Supreme Lord, because there is no qualification other than surrender, saranagati, giving yourself. No other qualifications required for this path. So it's just suitable for you because you're just a boy. You don't have the qualifications to perform the rituals and this and that and this and that. Just give yourself to the Supreme Lord. And what does that mean? The second sentence, you should therefore completely absorb yourself in the devotional service of the Lord. You should absorb your consciousness in devotedly trying to please Him. In Arjuna's case, it was Mam Anusmara, remember me, and Yudhya Cha, fight. Absorb your consciousness in Krishna and do what you do for His pleasure. But absorb manmana, absorb your mind in thinking about me and bhava mad bhakto, and then become my devotee. Think about me. So this is the essence of the process of bhakti. Interesting purport, the second paragraph. Narada Muni is referred to here in this verse as Bhagavan because he can bless any person just as the Supreme Personality of Godhead can. He was very pleased with Dhruva Maharaj, and he saw in Dhruva Maharaj that he had the qualities required for success. And he was pleased with him, even though he was so young. He was very pleased with Dhruva Maharaj, and he could have at once personally given whatever he wanted. But that is not the duty of the spiritual master. His duty is to engage the disciple in proper devotional service as prescribed in the Shastras. To engage the disciple in devotional service in such a way that he will become qualified to be in the spiritual world. To make the heart of a similar quality, a pure loving quality as the other residents of Vrindavan. And then we will be there. And as I was saying before, we can't be in the spiritual world until our heart is the same as the residents of the spiritual world. Just like you can't get near fire unless you are composed of fire. You try to get near fire, and you can only get so close. But fire can enter fire, and simply when our heart is pure and full of devotion, we can also enter into the spiritual world. So the heart must become like that, and that is the practical function of the spiritual master, to engage the disciple in such a way, or give him the means by which his heart can be purified in that way. So that's the essence. He spoke the essence first, Narada Muni said, that absorb yourself fully in the devotional service of the Lord. Any person who desires the fruits of the four principles of religiosity. That means economic development, sense gratification, the four principles. Religiosity, dharma, economic development, artha, sense gratification, kama, and at the end, liberation. Any person who wants the fruit of those things should engage himself in the devotional service of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Why? Whatever you want, we've been speaking about this point also, whatever we want, we should still worship Krishna, for worship of the lotus feet of the Lord yields the fulfillment of all these. So where, when you're going to perform devotional service, you need a place to do it. So where is Narada going to tell Dhruva to perform his devotional service? 42. My dear boy, I therefore wish all good fortune for you. You should go to the bank of... Yes, not to the bank of... There's so many banks, yeah, and ATM machines too. Not those banks. They won't give us what we want. But this bank will. The bank of the Yamuna. And make a withdrawal of bhakti by the mercy of Yamuna Devi. But you have to open up an account. And if you try to withdraw money from my account, you'll find that it's empty. There's nothing in it. The money of bhakti. You should go to the bank of the Yamuna, where there is a virtuous forest named Madhuvan. That means the forest of sweetness. And there, be purified. Raise your hand if you've ever been to Madhuvan. Yeah, Madhuvan, very close to Vrindavan, the Vrindavan forest, and Talavan also. Just by going there, by going to Braja, Madhuvan, one draws nearer to the Supreme Personality of Godhead who always lives there. Here's Prabhupada's purport. Both Narada Muni and Suniti, the mother of Dhruva Maharaj, advised Dhruva Maharaj to worship the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Now, Narada Muni is especially giving him directions how the worship can very quickly fructify. He recommends Dhruva Maharaj go to the bank of Yamuna, where there's a forest of the name Madhuvan, and begin his meditation and his worship there. Places of pilgrimage yield a special advantage for a devotee in quickly advancing his spiritual life. Lord Krishna lives everywhere, but still it is very easy to approach him in holy places of pilgrimage because these places are inhabited by great sages. Lord Sri Krishna says that he lives wherever his devotees are chanting the glories of his transcendental activities. There are many places of pilgrimage in India, and especially a prominent are Badri Narayan, Badrinath, Dwarka, Rameshwar, Jagannath Puri. These sacred places are called Charadham, the four dhams. Dhamma refers to a place where one can immediately contact the Supreme Lord. To go to Badri Narayan, one has to pass through Haridwar on the path to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And that's what Haridwar means, literally. Dwar means the gate, and Hari means the Lord. So the gateway to the Lord. Similarly, there are other holy places of pilgrimage, such as Prayag and Mathura. And the topmost of all places of pilgrimage is Vrindavan. Unless one is very advanced in spiritual life, it is recommended that he lives in such holy places and executes devotional service there. But an advanced devotee like Narada Muni, who is engaged in preaching work, can serve the Supreme Lord anywhere. Sometimes he even goes to hellish planets. Hellish conditions do not affect Narada Muni because he is engaged in greatly responsible activities in devotional service. According to the statement of Narada Muni, Madhuban, which is still existing in the Vrindavan area, in the district of Mathura, is a most sacred place. And many saintly devotees still live there and engage in the devotional service of the Lord. So, go to the Yamuna, go to Madhuban, and more instructions. My dear boy, in the waters of the Yamuna River, which is known as the Kalindi, you should take 3 baths daily because the water is very auspicious, sacred, and clear. After bathing, you should perform the necessary regulative principles for Astanga Yoga. And then sit down on your asana, sitting place, in a calm and quiet position. So first, keep yourself clean by bathing, and of course, if your bathing is in the Yamuna River, then your cleanliness will be very, very, very deep, especially because it is necessary in spiritual life that one becomes as much affected by the mode of goodness as possible. So cleanliness, therefore, is next to godliness. So you bathe regularly, keep clean, keep the mind in goodness, so that the mind is peaceful. And then after sitting on your asana, practice the 3 kinds of breathing exercises, and thus gradually control the life air, the mind, and the senses. Completely free yourself from all material contamination, and with great patience, begin to meditate on the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So the whole process of Astanga Yoga, Narada Muni summarizes in one verse, but it's very complicated, it's very difficult to do. But it begins by sitting on the asana and then performing the different yoga asanas, and when the body is perfectly fit, then one begins to manipulate the life airs by the process of pranayama, the breathing exercises. And after you've controlled the body through the asanas, then you control the mind through pranayama. And then when the pranayama is very, very powerful, because there is a direct relationship between the mind and one's breathing, and one can immediately actually cool down the mind and slow down the mind by the process of breathing. Breathing in a very regulated, deep manner, the mind immediately starts cooling down. And in fact, in most places in India, before a brahmana will chant his mantras, he'll do some pranayama first, just to make the mind more peaceful, so he'll be able to concentrate his mind upon the mantras. Even it is recommended in the Mahabhakti Bhakti Vilas. So then, when one can control the mind, one begins pratyahara, withdrawing the mind from this world so it can focus on the Supreme Lord within the heart, and then dharan, the beginning of the focus, then dhyan, meditation, and then ultimately samadhi. But the point here is that the meditation, or the goal of yoga, is to focus one's consciousness in the heart upon the all-beautiful Supreme Person, not something impersonal, but rather this all-attractive, most beautiful person. And the next verses, 45 to 51, will describe this beautiful person. And listen very carefully to what he looks like, or rather, where is Vyas? Okay, he's not here right now. But listen very carefully and try to visualize how beautiful this Supreme Lord is. The Lord's face is perpetually very beautiful and pleasing in attitude. To the devotees who see him, he appears never to be displeased, and he is always prepared to offer benedictions to them. His eyes, his nicely decorated eyebrows, his raised nose and his broad forehead are all very beautiful. He is more beautiful than all the demigods. The Lord's form is always youthful. Every limb and every part of his body is properly formed, free from defect. His eyes and lips are pinkish like the rising sun. He is always prepared to give shelter to the surrendered soul, and anyone so fortunate as to look upon him feels all satisfaction. The Lord is always worthy to be the master of the surrendered soul, for he is the ocean of mercy. The Lord is further described as having the mark of Srivatsa, or the sitting place of the goddess of fortune, and his bodily hue is deep bluish. The Lord is a person. He wears a garland of flowers, and he is eternally manifest with four hands, which hold the conch shell, wheel, club, and lotus flower. The entire body of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Vasudeva, is decorated. He wears a valuable jeweled helmet, necklaces, and bracelets. His neck is adorned with the Kastuba jewel, which represents the living entities, and it is right upon the chest of the Lord near his heart. And he is dressed in yellow silk garments. The Lord is decorated with small golden bells around his waist, and his lotus feet are decorated with golden ankle bells. All his bodily features are very attractive and pleasing to the eyes. He is always peaceful. He is calm and quiet and very pleasing to the eyes and the mind. Real yogis, they meditate upon the transcendental form of the Lord as he stands on the whorl of the lotus of their hearts. The jewel-like nails of his lotus feet are glittering. The Lord is always smiling. And the devotees should constantly see the Lord in this form as he looks very mercifully towards the devotee. In this way, the meditator should look towards the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the bestower of all benedictions. Varada Arshabham. He is the bestower of all benedictions. Please meditate on what that means. Because we all feel ourselves needy in this world. And he is the bestower of all benedictions. If we develop our relationship with him, he can give us what he wants. He can give us what we want. So Dhruva was told by Narada to meditate on him. Soon as you gain some control over your mind, focus your mind upon him. Beautiful person. One who meditates in this way, this is 52, concentrating his mind upon the always auspicious form of the Lord, is very soon freed from all material contamination. Who remembers what I just read? Did you hear that? Wait, first raise your hand if you remember it. I just want to see. I won't look even. I won't look and see who's not raising their hand. You didn't raise your hand. I'll read it again. One who meditates in this way on the Lord, concentrating his mind upon the always auspicious form of the Lord, is very soon freed from all material contamination. Very soon, if we can put our consciousness on him, because our consciousness is on so many other things, and it jumps from one thing to the next, so self-centered usually. But if we can just focus our consciousness on Pundarikaksham, the lotus-eyed Lord, our heart becomes pure. And that is what we are doing when we're chanting Krishna's holy names. We're focusing our consciousness. This is why we listen. This is why we try to chant with some feeling and meditate on Him. It's a meditation upon the all-attractive Supreme Lord, and by doing that, our heart is cleansed. We are very soon freed from all material contamination. But the problem is, if we don't do it properly, we don't get the result. Properly simply means having the consciousness filled with the sound vibration of Krishna's holy name. Or a step even earlier than that is making the sincere attempt to do that. Even if we're not successful, it doesn't make any difference on one level. But the attempt that we're sincerely trying is what Krishna sees. According to our capacity, we may or may not have differing degrees of success. We will have differing degrees of success. But the attempt is ours. So one who is able to focus his consciousness, have his consciousness absorbed in the name of Krishna, the form of Krishna, the pastimes that Krishna performs, then very quickly he is freed of contamination. Om pavitra pavitrava sarva vastum gatom pisa yat smaret. One who remembers Pundarikaksham, the lotus-eyed Lord, sabhayam vyantara suchi. He becomes clean inside and outside by remembering the Lord, the conscience. And it's obvious, if we remember unclean things, we become unclean. We feel unclean. When we remember, have our consciousness focused on something that's pure, someone who's pure, we become purified. And this is the art of Krishna consciousness, somehow or another, absorbing our mind, our consciousness in Krishna, somehow or another. Somehow, if we're not doing things that are obviously directly connected with Krishna, like staring at a picture of Krishna, or reading the Bhagavatam, or worshipping the deity, or chanting Krishna's names, if we're not doing something like that, then we have to, it's in our interest to see the connection, make conscious the connection between what we are doing and Krishna's service. Prabhupada explains this in the 18th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, saying we should think that we're engaged the way we are engaged by Krishna. And let me serve him somehow by what I'm doing. I'm not quoting exactly, but this is Chaitasya Sava Kamani, Maya Sanyasya Matpara, Bhudi Ogam Upasita, Machita, Satatam Bhava. And all activities and their results just depend on me and work always under my protection in such devotional service. Be fully conscious of me. This is what we want to do. So Narada continues. So far, what has he told them? Go to Vrindavan. He's told them, bathe, keep clean in body and mind. Sit down on your asana, perform Astanga Yoga, and meditate on the form of the Lord. And if you do that, you will be able to gradually focus your consciousness more and more, become absorbed in Him. In thinking about Him more and more and more, you'll be absorbed in that world instead of the nasty material world. We'll be absorbed in that world. 53. O son of the king, Now here's the next thing. You're meditating, your consciousness is full of the Lord. But now I shall speak unto you the mantra, which is to be chanted with the process of meditation. So here is the next thing. Chant the mantra. One who carefully chants this mantra for 7 nights can see the perfect human beings flying in the sky. I'm not sure. The Sapta Rishis. Sapta Ratram. 7 nights. Chanting, a person can see human cave charan. Human beings who travel in space. If you want to see human beings, spacemen, who can move around in the sky, this is how to do it. But there are also other benefits that you can get by chanting mantras. So Prabhupada explains in the purport, please listen to this, because he's going to relate this to our following of the process, which means obviously chanting the Hare Krishna mantra. Another point, Prabhupada says, this is the second paragraph of Prabhupada's purport. Another point established in this verse is that meditation should be carried on with the chanting of a mantra. Chanting of the Hare Krishna mantra is the easiest process of meditation in this age. As soon as one chants the Hare Krishna mantra, he sees the form of Krishna, Rama, and their energies. And that is the perfect stage of trance. One should not artificially try to see the form of the Lord while chanting Hare Krishna. But when chanting, the chanting is performed offensively, the Lord will automatically reveal himself to the view of the chanter. And this is the basic process that Prabhupada gave us in chanting Hare Krishna. Chant offensively. Know what the offenses are for the purpose of avoiding them. And instead of chanting with offenses in the consciousness, chant offensively with Krishna in the consciousness, in our consciousness. And then Krishna will automatically reveal himself to the view of the chanter. We will be able to see Krishna by his grace. The chanter, therefore, has to concentrate on hearing the vibration. And without extra endeavor on his part, the Lord will automatically appear. So that's what we should basically do. Just hear, listen to the sound vibration. Basically. And then Krishna will do the rest. And here is the mantra that he gave Dhruva Maharaj, and already gave Dhruva. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate
Vasudevaya.
Om Namo
Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
I know a man. I actually met him when I was in Hong Kong almost 40 years ago. He was a businessman. And we became a little friendly. Well, we were almost the same age, actually. And he told me at that time that his guru had given him a mantra and taught him to always keep it in his mind and keep it running and running and running always in his mind along with his breathing. And he said, pretty much all the time, I chant this mantra. And
Of course, I didn't ask him what it was. I didn't think that was polite. But then, and he never told me either. But and then I re-met him just a few years ago, not having seen him for so many years, for like 30 years practically speaking. And he had some, he had some very funny pictures of this little boy named Birijan when he was 20-something years old, and this little girl named Jagatrini. And we were there saving the world in Hong Kong. We looked so little, like little children almost. But anyway, he told me what the mantra was. Just it came out when we were talking. And although he had no association, he actually ended up being, and of course, he always would talk in personal philosophy, and our relationship was very much me yelling at him. And he told me this time, "You were always very heavy with me." But he had a taste for something Krishna conscious, and he actually came to Vrindavan fairly recently for the first time. But the mantra was this, Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. So by chanting this mantra for 35 years, he actually is something like, you know, he's on the way. He's been to Vrindavan, and he said, at least I'm convinced that the Supreme is a person. That's pretty rare. He's the only person in Hong Kong other than the devotees who actually believes that. So anyway, very, very wonderful mantra. Wonderful mantra. So Narada gave that mantra to Dhruva Maharaj, 54 continuing. This is the 12-syllable mantra for worshipping Lord Krishna. One should install the physical forms of the Lord. So you should meditate, you should chant the mantra, and also you should have a deity. And these are so much of, this is what we do. This is what we do. One should install the physical forms of the Lord, and with the chanting of the mantra, one should offer flowers and fruits and other varieties of foodstuff exactly according to the rules and regulations prescribed by authorities. But this should be done in consideration of place, time, and attendant conveniences and inconveniences. So in different parts of the world, and Prabhupada speaks about this in the purport very strongly, because he had to make so many adjustments to be able to spread Krishna consciousness throughout the world. And he also, did he speak about it here? No, but later he'll talk about how that when he went to the West, there were no tulsi plants at all. And he was very sad, very unhappy. So he continues with the instruction, and again, these are the basic instructions by which we also absorb our consciousness in Krishna. And by absorbing our consciousness in Krishna, meditating upon Him, pleasing Him, we purify ourselves so greatly. So one should worship the Lord by offering pure water, pure flower garlands, fruits, flowers, and vegetables, which are available in the forest, or by collecting newly grown grasses, small buds of flowers, or even the skins of trees, and if possible, by offering tulsi leaves, which are very dear to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Prabhupada speaks about tulsi in the first paragraph of his purport. I'd like to read that. Listen, please. It is specifically mentioned herein that tulsi leaves are very dear to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and devotees should take particular care to have tulsi leaves in every temple and center of worship in the Western countries. While engaged in propagating the Krishna consciousness movement, we were brought great unhappiness because we could not find tulsi leaves. We are very much obliged, therefore, to our disciple, Srimati Govindadasi, because she has taken so much care to grow tulsi plants from seeds, and she has been successful by the grace of Krishna. Now, tulsi plants are growing in almost every center of our movement. So Prabhupada was very, very happy about that. Before, there was no tulsi in any other part of the world, practically speaking, other than India. And now, all over the world, tulsi are being taken care of. Here, it's difficult to take care of tulsi, it seems, and to grow tulsi successfully. But if someone could figure out how to do it, it would be really wonderful. Has anyone been successful? Very successful in growing tulsi?
Sometimes,
I had
a
very little one. One?
Well, it was very little. Young gave me. Yeah.
No, but she had all the time
tulsi. Very big one,
no?
Huge,
yeah.
But
in the winter,
yeah.
Animals
come.
There's
a special bug that always
attacks
there.
Anyway, we should find out, maybe if we can, someone could take it, their mission to figure out how to debug tulsi or something, get it, write a program. But if someone could figure it out, it would be wonderful. Huh? In Vrindavan also, so many of the tulsis die in the winter in Vrindavan too. And it would be wonderful. And even Prabhupada mentioned, he thanks Govindadasi for starting the worship of tulsi. And then she used to, in the early days, in the early 70s, she used to send seeds all over to the devotees, and that's how tulsi became all over. And even when we were in Hong Kong, we got a tulsi plant in the winter too from the local Hindu temple, and it was very, very long and few leaves and spindly, and we didn't know anything about gardening or worshipping tulsi, and we would water it a lot and everything, and lost all its leaves, and it looked very much like it was no longer there. It looked quite dead. And then, but we thought maybe it's going to come back in the, you know, when it gets warmer. So we kept on worshipping. And then suddenly this little green plant started growing next to it. So, and we worshipped that for 2 months. And it was a weed. It's very important to know the difference between a tulsi plant and a weed. Because we don't want to worship our weeds. You're laughing. So he continues describing the process. It is possible to worship the form of the Lord made of physical elements, such as earth, water, pulp, wood, and metal. In the forest, one can make a form with no more than earth and water and worship him according to the above principles. A devotee who has full control over himself should be very sober and peaceful and must be satisfied simply by eating whatever fruits and vegetables are available in the forest. So the mantra is there, the deity worship should always be there, prasadam is there, controlling the mind and being peaceful. How does a devotee be peaceful in this crazy world? If it's easier in one sense to be peaceful living in the forest, long as there are no tigers and lions and snakes and mosquitoes and elephants, etc. there. And as long as there's a supermarket nearby. It's not easy to be peaceful anywhere. But the way one can be peaceful, there's only one way, is place oneself in the hands of Krishna and trust the hands of Krishna. Otherwise, it's not possible to be peaceful in this world. And without being peaceful, we can't worship properly, we can't chant properly, we can't serve properly. I must be peaceful, I must be peaceful, I must be peaceful, I must be peaceful, I must be peaceful. Even though I'm not peaceful, I must be peaceful, I must be peaceful, I must be peaceful. Okay, we have to do whatever is required. But we're supposed to chant and depend on Krishna. My dear Dhruva, beside worshipping the deity and chanting the mantra three times a day, you should meditate upon the transcendental activities of the Supreme Personality of Godhead in His different incarnations as exhibited by His supreme will and personal potency. The last paragraph of Prabhupada's purport. Narada advises Dhruva to meditate on the pastimes of the Lord, which is as good as the meditation of concentrating one's mind on the form of the Lord. As meditation on any form of the Lord is valuable, so is chanting of different names of the Lord, such as Hari, Govinda, and Narayan. But in this age, we're especially advised to chant the Hare Krishna Mahamantra as enunciated in the Shastra. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. One should follow in the footsteps of previous devotees regarding how to worship the Supreme Lord with the prescribed paraphernalia. Or one should offer worship within the heart by reciting the mantra to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is no different from the mantra. So one can do it using the gross material elements, or subtly one can make offerings within the mind, which is such an amazing and wonderful thing, because at any time, at any place, if one doesn't have anything to do, or if one is stuck somewhere, one can think of Krishna in any form and just start making offerings to Him with tulsi. You can cook different food and offer it to Him. You can make jeweled necklaces, rubies and gold. Pearls you can string and give to Him. The most beautiful flower garlands. You could go anywhere in the world and pick the most wonderful fruits. The most wonderful ripe, luscious mangoes and tico fruits and lychees and whatever. And prepare them and offer them to the Lord. You can take a beautiful rose and in your mind and place it in the hand of Srimati Radharani. And when these things are done with devotion, Krishna accepts it. He's not in need of anything, but He wishes us to make offerings with devotion. It is for our benefit. Anyone who thus engages in the devotional service of the Lord seriously and sincerely with his mind, words, and body, and who is fixed in the activities of the prescribed devotional methods, is blessed by the Lord according to his desire. That means if we are like Dhruva and desire a kingdom, he'll bless us with that. Or if we desire something more on the spiritual level, he will bless us with that. If a devotee desires material religiosity, economic development, sense gratification, or liberation from the material world, he is awarded these results. If one is very serious about liberation, he must stick to the process of transcendental loving service, engaging 24 hours a day in the highest stage of ecstasy. Bhakti yogena bhuyasya. Tam narantara bhavena bhajetadava muktaye. And he must certainly be aloof from all activities of sense gratification. And then the final verse, these are the instructions of Narada. When Dhruva Maharaj, the son of the king, was thus advised by the great sage Narada, He circumambulated Narada, his spiritual master, and offered him respectful obeisances. Then he started for Madhuvan, which is always imprinted with the lotus footprints of Lord Krishna, and which is therefore especially auspicious.
So Vrindavan is considered even more auspicious than Vaikuntha, the spiritual world, because in Vaikuntha the Lord wears slippers, shoes. So his feet don't actually touch the ground. But in Vrindavan, just as a cowherd boy, he walks around without shoes. And his lotus feet imprint the ground everywhere he walks. So therefore, being marked with the lotus footprints of Krishna, Vrindavan is the most auspicious place, and that's why Dhruva went there. And very interestingly, during the time of Krishna, all the residents of Vrindavan and even the animals, they gathered together and they had a meeting. And you know what they decided? Well, Krishna has marked the ground, we should not with his footprints, we should not disturb them. We shouldn't walk over them or anything like that. So Krishna's lotus footprints are marked. The dust of Vrindavan has been touched by the lotus footprints of Krishna. So therefore it's always very holy, completely holy. Okay, we'll stop here. Any questions or comments?
I was asking myself why, asking you, why Vyasadeva chose to begin the Srimad Bhagavatam, first canto and second canto, with this mantra of Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya, while the goal of the Srimad Bhagavatam is the lotus feet of Krishna.
Well, if you look in unveiling his lotus feet, there is an answer to that question, as refers to in the second canto. In the second canto. And also the first canto, it's auspicious. And Vasudeva is Krishna. Vasudeva is not different from Krishna, that's one of his names. But all.
Mathura.
Huh?
Krishna is Mathura. Mathura Vasa.
Actually, most editions of the Bhagavatam don't begin with in the second canto with that mantra. Just begins with the first verse. Any other questions or comments? Yes. Do you think I could have a cup also?
Right there.
Well, good.
I was wondering, in another Morris Chan, to the forest of Vrindavan, and how he didn't become a devotee of Krishna. It was devotee of Narayan, yeah? How to go to Vrindavan and Krishna prominent there, how did he became a devotee of Krishna? And why he spent this stuff?
Because holy places very positively affect our devotional practices. Holy places very powerfully affect, positively affect our devotional practices. That's why it's easier to advance in Krishna consciousness in one sense if one is staying in a holy place, because the influence, because it's a holy place such as Vrindavan, it's not in the material world, even though it appears to be in the material world. It's like there's a thin covering of matter over it, but it's so, the spiritual part just pours through. So it so positively affects one, if one is, especially if one is engaged in chanting and hearing and service. So that's why he sent them there, out of his causeless mercy, so he could get the benefit that he wanted. But he wasn't a devotee of Krishna at this point. He was a devotee, but he was a devotee of Lord Narayan. So it's possible to, and so many people do this, they worship Krishna as an incarnation of Narayan even. So we don't agree with that, and we prove it from the Bhagavatam, and Jiva Goswami proves it very carefully. But still, Krishna is so kind, he reciprocates with everyone according to their desire. So Dhruva had a particular desire, and Krishna reciprocated with him in that way. So is that good or bad, that Krishna reciprocates with us according to our desire?
Sometimes,
so we have to be careful. But it's essentially the most wonderful news that according to how we desire, yayitam mam prapadyante, Krishna is going to reciprocate with us. But if we desire something very, very wonderful, unless we are very, very qualified, we won't be able to receive that wonderful thing. So Krishna, before we get that most wonderful thing, he works on making us qualified, making our consciousness pure and strong and whole again. Even in Vrindavan, there are Mayavadis. They love the sweetness of Vrindavan, but they think that the highest is impersonal and that Krishna is Maya. So how is that possible? There are devotees of Ram in Vrindavan. Krishna is so kind that he reciprocates with what we desire. So when we're in Vrindavan especially, or everywhere really, we should be very careful with our desiring. And that therein lies the danger of all the television and the movies and the advertisements that all bombards our minds continuously with trying to fill our mind with so many desires that are actually detrimental for us mentally, spiritually, physically. So it's so difficult to live in the material world because it's going in such an opposite direction from where we really ultimately want to go. So we have to associate with the devotees, and we should follow the prescriptions given here. And what will that do? That will make our desires, it will purify our desires. And that's what happens to Dhruva Maharaj. Gradually, by following this process, his desire is going to be purified. And then he's going to get what he had been longing for, and he's going to think of it as completely insignificant. So the whole thing rests on our desiring. So that's a very interesting point to meditate upon. So even if we're not very qualified on a certain level, even if we can't do very much on a certain level, even if our circumstances are very difficult on a certain level, we should try to keep our desiring wonderful. Wonderful. We should desire the most wonderful thing, even though we may not be
appear very qualified, but we should keep our desires very exalted, and it'll just be a matter of time. Again, this is what the advertising industry is based on. This principle. Saint Bhagavad Gita describes it. Jayato visya from san sangas te sopa jayate. By meditating on the objects of the senses, attachment develops. And from attachment, what's next? And then, what is it? So they put some silly old television or something in front of your eyes, or a new car, and they match it with some beautiful looking creature, and then your desires increase, and they connect the television with a beautiful creature somehow through some psychological manipulation, and suddenly you're desiring the television where you didn't desire it at all. And then right after you desire it, you're in the store, and somehow you can't control yourself, you know. Why am I want two of them or something? It's so true that you start seeing things and then you want them. You want them. But you meditate upon, even though you're completely satisfied, you don't need them. When you see them impulsively, you want them. So Krishna consciousness is really based on that principle, in the sense that if we should meditate, hear about Krishna, we should chant his name, we should hear his pastimes of all the incarnations, and we should develop a desire to serve Krishna, to love Krishna, to serve him with great devotion, to serve him as the residents of Vrindavan serve him. We should desire these things, and it's just a matter of time before the circumstances are arranged by Krishna that we will fulfill that desire. So the focusing of one's desires is what purity is about. Mode of goodness is cultivated, because that will keep us pure enough to desire this very elevated goal. Any other questions or comments?
Vrindavan forest and all the other 12 forests were already at the time of Sulamana.
They're eternal.
So how did the residents of the British Yugans relate to them? Were Krishna being worshipped there?
It seems that way. Madhavan is famous for many things. If you read the history of Madhavan, it was also a holy place during the time of Lord Ramachandra. There are three or four different reasons why it's a holy place. For us especially, it's a place where Krishna performs his pastimes. But still, even in the earliest days, it's known that Krishna is born here in Vrindavan. Because he was there in the last yuga. He took his birth in the previous cycle of yugas there, so it's known.
My next question is...
Well, is the last question actually satisfied?
Yeah, the next question is exactly on this point. Is that Indra didn't know the identity of Krishna? He didn't realize that he's God? Or he was covered up by yoga maya?
One could say both, but because when you think of God, you think of the supreme controller, the one who causes the creation of the universe, the one who causes the destruction of the universe, the one who makes sure that he's watching every single thing that you do, and if you do something wrong, the thunderbolt will come. And if you do something good, something wonderful will fall from there. The supreme controller, creator. And there he is, wandering around Vrindavan without his shoes, herding the cows, this big. And even Indra, Lord Brahma, he couldn't. He said, "Is this my master? I know my master's Krishna, but how is it?" And look at that. He's carrying food. He's eating yogurt and rice in his left hand. Now everyone knows you're not supposed to eat with your left hand. And God is eating with his left hand. He can't afford shoes, and he's herding cows. Doesn't playing with his friends, and sometimes his friends defeat him. So it's very difficult to understand. Krishna is very difficult to understand. And Indra became proud. Of course, there's Krishna's desires at work. But he became proud of his position. So that shows us that it's very easy to become proud and envious and inimical. As soon as we become proud, we lose everything. All good sense, all Christian consciousness. And your next question? Pride is very dangerous. But Krishna is very hard to understand. How is it? Because when we think of God, it's big, it's not 5 years old. I mean, therefore, you could talk with people of different religions, and as soon as you keep the concept of God vague, without any true definition, everyone will agree. But as soon as you start talking anything specific about Him, then people start saying, "How is that possible?" They'll start saying, "If you say that He likes peacock feathers, and not ostrich feathers and parrot, this feather and crow's feathers, or this. He likes the flute. Are you saying that he doesn't like the saxophone? He doesn't like the trombone? He doesn't like the violin? He likes cows. You mean he doesn't like goats and buffaloes?" So as soon as you get specific, then people think that limits God. But what to do if he likes these things? He's a person. So if you say he's not allowed to like peacocks, that limits him. If he likes them, he likes them. And he really likes to play the flute. When he's a young boy, he has practices and he becomes expert so quickly, and everyone's so amazed at Krishna's flute playing. And everyone is completely captivated by his flute playing. And the rocks, they melt. And the rivers stop flowing by Krishna's flute playing. It is so sweet and so beautiful. And he is so beautiful and so sweet and so pleasing. And everyone in Vrindavan loves him. So if he wants to be a cowherd boy, if this is what he ultimately is, a cowherd boy in Vrindavan, who likes to wander around the fields of Vrindavan with his friends and exchange the sweetest pastimes of love, who can stop him? But how difficult it is to understand. Without bhakti, it cannot be understood. Universes come from his skin holes, from the pores of his skin. He creates day and night, everything. And he's a cowherd boy wandering around Vrindavan with no shoes. Who could understand this? And he dances with the wives of others in the middle of the night. What do you think?
The highest object of affection, because the Gopis left everything and just came home.
Your God worships, he dances with the wives of others in the middle of the night. A man once said that to me in Bangladesh. He said, "How can you worship a God who dances with the wives of others in the middle of the night?" He was a Hindu. that had been converted to a Christian. And this is what he had taught. So the Christians are always preaching in Bangladesh to all the Hindus, but they are very afraid to preach to the Muslims, because if they preach to the Muslims, they will get their heads cut off. So he said that to me. First you have to understand what God is. Therefore, these pastimes of Krishna, when he performs very intimate pastimes with his devotees, they are not for common people, because it's impossible for them to understand, because they see them with their material eyes. Well, in fact, it has nothing to do with matter at all, and the material motivations that possess us. So therefore, before one reads the 10th canto, one is supposed to read 1 through 9. So one gets purified and understands the person who is the Supreme Lord.
So now the Muni was describing the form of Narayan. I think he mentioned that he sits on a petal in the heart.
Lotus
petal. So is the Paramatma and the same form as Narayan?
That's what he's talking about, the forearm form of the Paramatma.
But there's also Narayan in Vaikuntha?
And there is also Narayan in the heart. And this is the one in the heart.
Oh.
And there's also Krishna can be in the heart too. If that's what you want. So there's no difference really. Krishna appears as Lord Narayan or as the Paramatma, depending upon what. Just like there's no difference between the king and the person who lives in the palace. You know, he lives in the palace and he's a person, but it's the same person who's the king, and it's the same person who walks on the parade. But he has different functions, and he wears different type of clothes when he's in his private quarters. He's dressed in one way. When he's on the throne, he's dressed in another way. When he's playing, when he's riding his horse and wrestling with the wrestlers, he's dressed in another way. But it's the same person performing different functions.
You spoke about peacefulness. And I was wondering, how is peacefulness connected to if we do devotional service and it's very active? There's a lot of activity, so this may bring a mode of passion.
It can bring a mode of passion, but it doesn't have to bring a mode of passion. And if we do our devotional service, even if it's active, and we evoke the mode of passion, it's not the devotional service that's making it passionate, it's our particular nature and how we tend to control, want to control, and do things in a very passionate way. This is the mode of passion, where the same activity can be done more in the mode of goodness or more depending on Krishna. Can be done. But because we have the passionate tendencies, it's difficult for us. Oh.
Because I was thinking, especially working with kids.
Especially working with kids, especially anything.
And, I mean, because that's what I'm doing, so that's why I was thinking.
Yeah, but notice how difficult it is to remember Krishna and think about Krishna when your mind is passionate. So difficult. And when you're peaceful and you're doing things, okay, let's see what Krishna wants. And it's almost easier. So the trick, what we're supposed to do with our consciousness, is remember Krishna and do our work for his pleasure. And for his pleasure is the secret of remembering him. If you think of yourself, I'm doing this to please Krishna, then naturally you'll think about him. But because we forget Krishna, and we forget pleasing him, therefore naturally the laws of material nature keep whipping us, beating us, giving us so much trouble. It's already 8:40, so later. And you all have so many things to do tomorrow, so I'm afraid of keeping you late. So I don't think we should talk much longer. I found it especially interesting to understand that the very secret process that Narada Muni gave Dhruva is basically the process that we have. All the elements are there. And tomorrow we'll hear how he performs them. It's quite astounding. But he's so focused. He knows what he wants. And he's going to perform the processes required to achieve it. Okay, so why don't we stop now? And tomorrow we shall continue this morning. Okay. Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Guru Maharaj ki jai, Guru Prabhupada ki jai, Gaur Bhaktivinoda ki jai.
I fixed the necklaces.
Diamonds and pearls?
I asked you to bring me, he said he would bring me the one that I already made.
But I didn't.
But I made new ones.
That's a good idea.
But I'm not sure about bracelets. I did it with silicone thread so you can stretch it a little bit. But I have a question if you can try it and then I can add the crystal.
Should I try it right now?
Either
now or never.
Okay, and this is also for the hair if it's. It's also in the silicone, but I don't know, maybe it's too big. And I also had a question about the fact that Prabhupada said in the purport that unless you're advanced, it would be something that you should stay without money.
He was making the point that preachers are advanced devotees because he wasn't in Vrindavan, and people who in Vrindavan think, oh, I'll just stay in Vrindavan. But to do Krishna's work and leave Vrindavan is also very wonderful, most wonderful. The Prabhupada was making the point that if one in the service of Krishna leaves Vrindavan, that is the most wonderful.
But also, to be in Vrindavan also requires some
investment. Yes, so much investment. And it's
very difficult to be in
Vrindavan. So, how? Very
serious contradictory. Because, how can I use?
One of your questions, where should I be?
Yes.
Ask it.
Where should I be?
Should be here, of course.
No, I mean, I know I should be here, but I have desire to be in Vrindavan, and I
That's
can't.
That's very good. So you should be here and desire to be in Vrindavan. Right by Govindan Hill. Every day you can offer flowers in your mind to Govindan Hill. Do you have a picture of Giriraj Govindan? Very good. These are real flowers or real mental flowers. And it could be desire to be there. And one day you will be. I always
You have to be more advanced, he said.
Say it's his gift, but it's ours. We can keep it. That's our part, the sincerity part. But it's his gift, really. But it's ours, too. That we can keep. But the only problem with that is we also keep our insincerity. That we should return.